You're listening to another football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns with Banker Bill.
Ryan, you should get off the internet.
And your guy, Bully Rye.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
Bill, it has been a little while.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
But we are back. It's your guy, Bully Rye, alongside Banker Bill for yet another football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. Unfortunately, Bill, we had some, some unfortunate situation take place that kept me from being able to sit upright for a little while, and
became a wee thing.
You're absolutely right. Bill, how's it going, man? How's your 2 weeks been post show going for you?
I mean, football wise, not so good, but I think otherwise, it's been a good couple of weeks, but football wise, I've had better weeks. It's been rough.
I do not blame you. Just a reminder, because it's been a few weeks since we've been here. If you're watching the show, be it social media on Tap Outs and Touchdowns, YouTube channel, Facebook.com/Tap Outs and Touchdowns, or Twitter/X at Tap Outs and TDs, make sure you leave a comment and join the conversation again. It's been a little while, so we're going to have to get back in the swing of things, considering, like you said, we've had a lot of stuff happen in the world of both college and the NFL when it comes to football. So let's go ahead and get started as we have reached the end of college football season. Before we get to the national championship game, because we were not here last week, we did not get to talk about the glaringly obvious situation that took place with Florida State taking a beating by the Georgia Bulldogs. Listen, I had a lot of people on social media kind of, I wouldn't say come after me, but a lot of people on social media had some excuses for Florida State about how they didn't play their starters. They were down most of their defensive guys that carried their defense all season. But Bill, Georgia had just as little to play for as Florida State did, but they came out and absolutely curb stomped Florida State. What are your thoughts on what took place before the national championship game?
Am I even really allowed to speak on this? I'm not sure that I should as a Gators fan. I mean, that is our most hated rival, right? So
I hope you do. No, let's hear it.
I just want to say that everything Florida State stood for during bowl season makes me very happy as a Gators fan, because they were an embarrassment to themselves, to the ACC, and to college football. They literally went, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. They were unprecedented quitters. It's never happened like that before, where a team got an invite to a New Year's Six Bowl, got snubbed, you know, whatever, to get in the playoffs. It's happened a couple times where teams thought they should have been in the playoffs and they did not go. Georgia was one of those teams. Oregon was one of the other teams. It wasn't Georgia this year. It was a previous Georgia team. They did not have anybody opt out because they didn't make the college football playoff. And Florida State quit. They quit. And not only did they quit, but they had a whole bunch of guys transfer that just said, I'm off the team. You know what? I'm off the team. Who knows why? And in the middle of that, Florida State as a university decided, you know what? We might leave the ACC because of this.
Who I mean, talk about take them?
Like the colossal, I mean, just embarrassment of what Florida State was that week. It was just terrible. They were, I think on what, the December 23rd, they were having a meeting trying to figure out whether or not they were going to leave the ACC because they were so angry that they were passed over with a broken quarterback with a terrible offense that just barely won their last two games against mediocre teams, that they were not picked to go into the college football playoff and get crushed. And then Georgia showed them how badly things could look. I mean, that was – and you and I were together watching that game. It was pretty off. We just kept staring at the screen going, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, like, listen,
this is terrible. I think I said it on the Tap Outs Touchdown Facebook page. I commented and said, you know what, this is a bad look for Florida State. This would be a bad look for Alcorn State. I don't think Alcorn State loses 63-3 in a bowl game to Georgia. That was terrible.
I, I don't know. First of all, Michael Davis in the chat, co-host of the Cat Cave, What a Day to Host Your Football Show, because we do have a lot of stuff to get to. We, you know, like you, I went to social media through the Tap House and Touchdowns Facebook page, and like you said, it would it be a bad look for Alcorn State? Florida State was looking for a conference to let them in. They were looking for an excuse to go to a better bowl game, to go to the college football playoff. If I am on the committee of any bowl game that sends invites, now granted, next year will change because we are going to 12 teams next year. But if I am on a bowl game committee for any bowl game beyond the playoff games at this point, what gives me a reason to invite Florida State? I think despite Liberty getting blown out by Oregon, and I've been on record on the show saying that I think that I would have liked to have seen Liberty play Florida State in the bowl game. We would have gotten a closer game for them.
That would have been a more competitive game, yes.
Yep, and Oregon, Georgia, I believe, as well. But I have no incentive to bring in Florida State to play a bowl game to get blown out to make it that unwatchable. Like, if I'm a sponsor, why do I want to sponsor a bowl game with a team that's not going to bring their players and they're not going to show up? If I'm a conference looking to add some clout to my conference, why am I bringing in a Florida State who's already been on record and clearly shown if they don't get their way, they are going to take their ball and they are going to go home and they are going to let the practice squad or the whatever you call them, the scouts.
I don't care if they were freshmen or not. I don't care. Yep. I don't care. Florida started 11 freshmen at some point during this season and they didn't get destroyed by Georgia 63-3. I don't care. They looked unprepared. They looked like they didn't want to be there. It was terrible. That is on the coaching staff. That's on the entire organization of football for that university. It's awful. It was awful. And I don't know what the ripple effect's going to be moving forward, but you can't deny there's going to be something. I don't know if I turn around and say, oh, hey, you know, I don't know if we want to put Florida State in our bowl, even if they're a good team, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not sure that I say that, but there are going to be ripples somewhere. That's going to be used somewhere to hurt that Florida State team. And as a Florida fan, I freaking love it. I love it.
Well, what I'm not sure if you love the fact that Georgia, another rival for Florida, showed up. Again, they had just as little to play for as Florida State.
So good.
And they showed up and showed out that made you wonder, could they have gone on to compete for a national championship? Because we saw Monday night, the Michigan Wolverines take their place atop the college football world, beat Washington 34-13 to win their first national championship under Jim Harbaugh. Bill, we didn't watch this game together, but I believe we watched this game at the same time. We both were rooting for Washington to win this game, not because I'm rooting against Michigan, but because I wanted somebody else to win. I think I asked you after the game was over, how long is it before we start having the naysayers come after Jim Harbaugh for the sign-stealing scandal? And again, real quick, if you're watching the show live with us, join the conversation and leave a comment wherever it is that you're watching, and we'll read it live on the show. But, Bill, what are your thoughts after watching this game? Obviously, Michigan was the better team. But give us your thoughts on how this game went down. And I don't know, maybe if you think Georgia would have been able to compete with this Michigan squad.
Well, Michigan was obviously the better team. They were a more physical team. I think they caught Washington by surprise. They ran all over them in the first half. I think they had 176 yards rushing in the first half alone. Finished with 303, which I think was a
national championship game record.
Yeah, they had two running backs, and they, for the first time in the history of the game, go for over 100 yards with Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum. They were fantastic all game long running the ball, being physical, and they did it on offense and on defense. I think Washington was just kind of caught by surprise at how physical that Michigan team was. I think it was a really good look for Michigan in Big Ten football. I think the Big Ten stood up and said, we can play with anybody by beating Alabama, the SEC champion, and then going in and beating the Pac-12 champion, who are going to be, I think they're going to be with them in the Big Ten next year, aren't they?
Yeah.
So
yeah, they will be.
That's a big deal. And Washington looked, I mean, Michael Penix looked fantastic all year long. He looked off the entire time in this game. The pressure immediately got to him. It was a really good look for Michigan football. They looked fantastic. But Ryan, I think we called that. I think you and I both expected it. We talked about it on the podcast before the championship game, before they played the playoff games, that whoever wins that Alabama-Michigan game, we both felt like they were going to put it to either Texas or Washington. So we saw that, although that was a closer game than the final score showed. It was 20-13 in the fourth quarter, and, yeah. and Michigan, you know, got away from them. But, you know, Michigan, they look really good, man. They look really good. Congratulations, Michigan Wolverines. Congratulations to Harbaugh. I mean, dang. That's was it 16 years it took him to win that? So congratulations. Glad he's finally a champion. And, yeah, they look really good.
Volley Polly in the chat. People are already saying Michigan's going to forfeit the title because of the sign stealing scandal. Mama Frick in the house. She actually said it. What's up? What's up, Mama Frick? Taking good care of me while I was on the mend last week. You mentioned whoever won that game between Michigan and Alabama, we thought was going to run rough shot in the national championship game. Well, I want to go back a few weeks ago. And by a few weeks ago, I mean about, let's call it eight or nine weeks ago, about 4 or 5 weeks into the college football season. I made a very bold prediction on this show that
come
by
on,
the
come
end.
On, come on. No, you're right.
By the end of 2023, 2024, that not only would Bill Belichick be out in New England, Nick Saban would be out at Alabama. Earlier today, if you're watching this show live on Wednesday, earlier today it was announced that Nick Saban will announce his retirement sometime within the next week. It was reported first by ESPN, run by ESPN. It is now over all news media outlets. I believe I sent it to you on an article from Yahoo Sports. Bill, I thought that he would be out being retired after having a bad season. So I kind of second-guessed myself wondering, well, he got a taste of the national championship playoff one more time. Are we going to see him at least one more season? And we are not. Bill, first of all, how impressed are you of me that I was able to predict this after Alabama lost to Texas? And then two, where do you rank Nick Saban? I mean, what's next for Alabama? Give us your thoughts on this news. I mean, Nick Saban is going to go down arguably as the best college coach in history, but what's next for Alabama?
I think for sure one of the best college coaches in football history. But am I impressed? Yeah, it's a good prediction. I mean, it's a little bit of low-hanging fruit. Like, if you were to say Andy Reid's going to retire after that, he's 65 years old. But Nick Saban is in his 70s, so it's like, you know, he's going to get there. You could have said that every year, and eventually you're going to be like, yes!
But I didn't. I only said it once, and this is the year.
Well, you might have said it last year, and I don't remember it. But, yeah, I'm just kidding. No, it was a good prediction. I think we're both a little bit surprised that after he made it to the college football playoff again, here's what I want to know. I'm going to go with your question, but I'm going to take it a little bit farther, and we'll talk about what's going to go with Alabama going forward, because there's a lot of coaching candidates that are being named out there. It's a possibility, and there are some that are big shockers. But is Nick Saban not wanting to deal with what college football has become?
There's a chance. I mean, not only that.
This is right before we go into this 12-team playoff.
Yep, right before the 12-team
playoff.
Wouldn't
you want, if you're not going to get fired, he's not getting fired. He's quitting. No. He's retiring. Wouldn't you want at least one season to just see what it's like, to just enjoy that moment? I mean, he did it with the Dolphins. He didn't make the playoffs as the Dolphins coach, but he was in the NFL and had an opportunity to make it to what would be a playoff. 9-7 was his best season. But wouldn't you just wait one more year just to see what that situation's like? Or is this a clean break, being that it's, you know, next year all of college football changes? Or maybe he's tired of things like the portal. He's been pretty vocal this week, or the last couple of weeks, on how college football is going the wrong direction and they need to fix it. Kirby Smart's been doing the same thing.
I mean, it's the same thing Mike Krzyzewski did. When college sports got out of the realm of what they were used to doing, and you could argue the backdoor dealings, the paying players before people knew about it.
Right.
All of a sudden, now it's more even playing field. Like, he made a comment about Jimbo Fisher buying the players in Texas A&M, and then he goes 5-7 with the number one rated recruiting class.
Right.
So,
and then terrible again the next year.
Yeah. So we've said it multiple times on the show that the transfer portal and NIL without regulation is ruining college sports. And I think additionally to that, the fact that they are expanding the playoff next year, to your point, I'm not sure if he wanted to deal with it anymore. I mean, he's, like you said, he's in his 70s. He has nothing left to prove. He's broken the record for most national championships.
Six national titles,
At Alabama. He's broken the record of Bear Bryant. I mean, I'm not sure who you could argue. You could argue Joe Paterno, but I'm not going to argue that because of what comes with the legacy of Joe Paterno. You could argue Bobby Bowden, but...
No, I mean, I'll never argue that.
right now, obviously you wouldn't, but
coward.
I think Nick Saban is going to go down as the greatest college football coach of all time. He won national championships with multiple schools, that being LSU and Alabama. You said somebody could predict it every year until it finally happens. But
they're going to get old enough that they're going to retire or die.
I mean, yeah.
It's terrible.
So I think he's going to be out of I don't want to say out of college football altogether, but I don't see him being being Lou Holtz, like going on TV and eventually not being able to talk anymore, a la Lee Corso, etc. But a pretty big deal. Now, as far as the future of Alabama goes, they've already lost a couple of recruits that were committed to sign on signing day in February. I expect personally to see a mass exodus of players, depending on who comes in and takes over, because they're going to have to come up with a replacement very quickly. I've heard a couple of the names. What are some of the names you're hearing tossed around for this job?
The one that's highest on the list, it looks like, according to ESPN, we'll just use ESPN's. I've seen On Threes as well, and most of the names are the same. ESPN says list Lane Kiffin as the number one possibility. Obviously, it came through the Alabama coaching tree at one point.
After he was fired at Southern Cal.
Yeah. After he was fired at Southern Cal, ended up back, down at FAU? Is that where Lane Kiffin ended up?
He went to FAU after he left.
Yeah, and then has bounced around. Well, not bounced around. Now he's moved up. He's all the way to Ole Miss, and he's made them pretty relevant. They're a pretty decent team, right? And we would expect them to be in the college football playoff next season if he doesn't move on. The other one that I can't even believe is your hated coach, Dabo Swinney.
Yep, that's Matt Buck says Dabo is going to come in. So Dabo Swinney played wide receiver at Alabama.
I know.
That's why he has been linked to Alabama. Also, Shannon Smith in the squad. The other co-host of the Carolina Panthers podcast, The Cat Cave, said he didn't miss the show this week. Listen, there's also rumors that Dabo signed another deal that he would have to pay dearly financially to get out of the contract in order to go coach at Alabama. I've also heard D'Amico Ryan's thrown out there.
Oh, good. He's getting a massive extension at Houston. Let's not even talk. Yeah. We're going to praise him later on this show.
Yeah. I don't see D'Amico Ryan's going. I wouldn't imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if Lane Kiffin took the job. I think Kiffin wanted that job. A name that's not being thrown around that I thought about, Bill O'Brien.
Terrible.
He was
convinced I'm a better coach than Bill O'Brien.
I mean, maybe in the NFL, but if he can.
You mean the guy that just got called out for calling their quarterback telling him that he sucked, quote unquote.
I mean, that's
who he wants to coach. You want to come to coach that sucky player? Like, that kid doesn't like him. So no way that's happening.
Well, I still think we're going to get a lot of players leaving Alabama.
Got a couple more.
Let's hear them.
Dan Lanning from Oregon.
Okay.
He was a graduate assistant in 2015 in Alabama.
Okay.
The other ones are kind of just flyers. Kalen DeBoer from Washington, because obviously he's shown that he can recruit and coach up there.
Yep.
Florida State coach Mike Norvell. Yes, take him away. Take him away. Watch the whole thing just crash and burn. One season just over.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Texas coach Steve Sarkisian. We know he came through there as the offensive coordinator.
Somebody else fired from Southern Cal that came back to Alabama.
Right. There you go. And then the last one is Penn State coach James Franklin, who obviously has done really well up there at Penn State.
And before that, he did really well at Vanderbilt. Volley Polly back in the chat. Which coaching position gets filled first, Alabama or the Carolina Panthers? Call me crazy. I think the Alabama job gets filled first. They don't want to lose recruits.
They have their pick. There's not a coach in college football, as long as they don't shoot too high. I almost wonder if Dabo shooting too high, unless he reaches out, which would be odd.
I think
if they don't shoot too high, there's not a coach in college football that wouldn't take that job.
4 years ago, Dabo Swinney would have been the odds-on favorite to take this job, and I think he might have taken it. But after seeing what he's done post national championship, post Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson, I'm not sure if Alabama fans want to see Dabo Swinney come to Alabama and take over the reins. I'll tell you my, and this is a dark horse that nobody's talking about. I would love Kirby Smart to take a lateral move and go to Alabama.
Like, so would I.
Throw the bag at Kirby Smart.
Give me the East then,
back. Well, not only that. Well, see, we don't know if we're going to get an SEC East and an SEC West with the addition of Oklahoma and Texas. But not only would I want to see Kirby Smart take the lateral move and take a huge pay increase to go to Alabama, I would want Georgia to promote Will Muschamp to the new head coach.
Oh.
And watch Georgia just absolutely squander.
What are you doing? We're anti-Florida State around here, not anti-Georgia. Come on.
I'm anti Will Muschamp. So anything I can do,
he's hurt both of our teams.
Okay. He's catching strays, man, and he deserves every single bit of it. Real quick, before we move on to the NFL, if you're watching the show live with us, make sure whatever it is, whether it's Twitter or X, YouTube or Facebook, leave a comment. Wherever it is that you're watching, join the conversation. As we shift gears now to NFL.
Before I just want to say this, Ryan, before we jump to the NFL, this Saban retirement is going to make silly season so much more fun in college football.
Silly season?
Yeah, the coaching carousel, the silly season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where we don't have anything really going on after recruiting and signing day, but now you're going to have this weird coaching carousel that happens. And like you said, there are players that are going to jump ship. There's going to be kids in the portal now that you're like, where did you go? Oh, Alabama's losing everybody. It's just going to be really, really interesting.
I'm right there with you. Jason Buck in the chat. Dabo makes the most sense, but Bama is going to shy away from Dabo because of his views on the portal.
Yep.
Yep. I don't disagree with that at all. That's a great take, Jason. Let's shift gears now. Let's go over to the NFL. We've got about 20 minutes to talk about college football. The NFL season is coming to an end, or it has come to an end. Matt Buck comes and says Jim Harbaugh to Bama. That's not happening.
No.
Jim Harbaugh will make a return to the NFL.
That's like coming off the top of the mountain. Remember, he's on the top of the mountain right now. Like I said, don't shoot too high. That's a little high.
The NFL season has come to an end, and not without more, I'm not sure, criticism for NFL officiating. Something else we did not get to talk about on last week's show was the debacle that was the Dallas Cowboys hosting the Detroit Lions in week 17.
I'm trying to do it in the screen. Okay.
The Brad Allen and his officiating crew completely botched an
not sure yet
sequence.
Actually, I'm gonna debate this with you.
I let's do it. Listen, okay. In fairness, if you go back to week 17 and watch the Lions Cowboys, the Lions had every opportunity to kick field goals early in that game that made the ending of that game irrelevant. However, with a sequence that saw an illegal formation / illegal touching where you had an offensive lineman report to the official. The official claimed that it was another guy that reported. It took back a 2-point conversion. It would have given the Lions the lead with very little time left. Instead of kicking the extra point, the Lions go for two once again. They do not get the conversion. They lose to the Cowboys 20-19. The Lions would essentially lose with the way that the week 18 ended. Mm-hmm. The Lions would be sitting in the one seed had they won this game. Go and look at the records. The Lions would be sitting in the one seed right now with the way that week 18 played out. The Lions would be 13-4, and they would be in the one seed, and they would be sitting home this weekend watching everybody else play. We have gone on record and gone off the record to criticize a lot of the NFL officiating this season, a lot of football officiating this year. Bill, thoughts on the direction of the way that football games are being officiated going forward?
Well, I feel like it needs to be fixed as a football fan. By the end of the season, I said something that I was a post on somewhere, that the NFL wears me out. I get tired of watching mistakes made, things like this going on. This is crazy. However, Ryan, I take a little bit of a different view towards the Brad Allen missed call. I have watched multiple angles of this, and I can see where Brad Allen screwed up. I can see it. There is a reason for it. Dan Skipper came on the field, and he was trying to tell Taylor Decker to remind him. And as he did it, he made the sign and said, make sure, and pointed at Taylor Decker, which was standing right next to Brad Allen. Brad Allen looked at Dan Skipper. Unfortunately, that's where Brad Allen went, he's the guy that's going, and completely ignored the guy that was standing 1 foot in front of him, which I don't know how that happens, but I can see.
Incompetency, that's how it happens.
But I can see how he would screw that up.
Nope.
He did screw it up. I'm choosing my words here. He did screw it up. It was messed up, but Skipper did come on and make the symbol, and Brad Allen just ignored the guy that was literally as far as I am away from my monitor right now, which I can't understand. Anyway, officiating, terrible. Just terrible. Everybody talks about it every single week. They shouldn't have to talk about it every single week. It's awful. But I will say this. What would fix officiating? What would make the NFL want to fix officiating? You would say loss of viewership. would probably be the number one thing, which would equate to eventually loss of revenue, which is what the NFL is all about. It's an entertainment sport. It wants to make money. That's what it's there for. The NFL recorded its second highest viewership upon average in the history. Well, since they have been recording that stat since 1995, this season. We've talked about this for multiple seasons. I talked about the 2005 Super Bowl being ruined by the officials when the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Seattle Seahawks. They have admitted they screwed it up, but it's not affecting who watches the NFL.
My problem is that Brad Allen has not admitted to screwing up. The NFL allowed them to officiate another primetime football game
the next week.
But are not letting them call a game for the playoffs, which is crazy because Brad Allen earlier in the season officiated a primetime game between the Eagles and Dolphins in which the Eagles had zero penalties called against them. A primetime game with the Chiefs and the Packers that saw a pass interference call not get called that directly affected that game. And then they had them call another primetime game with the Ravens, I believe the Browns in week 18. Real quick, a couple comments in the chat before we move on here. Carolina needs to get Eric Wolford from Bama. I'm not disagreeing with you. Tim Costello, the spread. Did Vegas steal the game? The spread was, I actually just looked at it. Pre-game, that spread was 6 points, and the Cowboys won by one. So they didn't really steal the game, but but Vegas didn't steal it. The officials may have. And Brad Allen will not, Shana Smith, Brad Allen will not admit to making that mistake. But you wonder what fans can do to make a change. They're not going to be able to do anything. The NFL is going to have to hold these guys accountable. And until Brad Allen does not have a job officiating NFL games, officials are going to be fine with missing calls and making mistakes week in and week out in the NFL going forward in college football. Matter of fact, the ACC officiated the national championship game. And there were plenty of missed and bad calls throughout the national championship game. It wouldn't have affected the outcome of the game, to be clear. But a lot of really poor officiating by probably the worst officiated conference in all of college football in the ACC, fitting for the all-crappy conference coming out of the That's why Florida State wants out. That's why Clemson wants out. That's why Florida State got left out of the playoff because everybody knows the all-crappy conference is not going to produce a national champion now that Clemson's heyday is essentially to an end. Let's move on here because we did have a 1 week in the NFL that finished the regular season. A lot of things happened, Bill. And let's go ahead and get this over with because it's your most painful thought process. The Buffalo Bills made a strong late-season push and in week 18 stole the AFC East from the grasp of the Miami Dolphins. Bill, is this more of a failure of the Dolphins to be able to continue to make that push? And I know the criticism that pundits have is that Miami can't beat a good team, or did Buffalo just get hot at the right time?
I don't think it's either. I think there's a lot of contributing factors. One of those factors is that Buffalo went 5-0 down the stretch, obviously. Their schedule was very easy coming down the stretch in comparison with what Miami was playing. Miami played Dallas, Baltimore, and then Buffalo, which is much tougher than, I think it was the Chargers, the Patriots, and then Miami. Now, granted, Buffalo head-to-head beat Miami down in Miami. However, at that time, Miami has, and they, this is my homer's corner, but so I don't want to go into it, but Miami has a massive, massive amount of injuries, and we will get into it. But I just think that they lost, I think, two or three players out of that game to season-ending injuries as they were playing against Buffalo. So it just was, there were some injuries on the Buffalo side, but they're not as bad as the Dolphins' injuries, of course. But just so many injuries, man. It's just, I heard a statistic. The Buffalo offensive line has been the exact same all season long. They have not had one injury along the offensive line all season long. They're one of two teams that did that. Miami played with more offensive line combinations than any other team other than the Jets. Look how good the Jets are for it.
Make sure the Carolina Panthers weren't there too.
Miami was number two.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and they still won 11 games. So the fact that they won 11 games, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's the playoffs, and it is what it is.
Pedro coming into the chat, remember saying the Bills are going to be a threat earlier this season. They caught me by surprise. I didn't expect it to happen. Shannon Smith, Josh Allen will still blow it in the playoffs, so it's all good. He's telling you not to worry about it.
I agree with that.
Which leads me to the next question, because not only did the Bills make a late season push, I had to eat some crow as the Pittsburgh Steelers finish the season 10-7 and find themselves in the playoffs, and they take on the Buffalo Bills in what is the biggest point spread of the weekend. Bill, what are your thoughts on Mike Tomlin getting the Steelers, who had a carousel of quarterbacks for themselves this year, making yet another postseason for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, Mike Tomlin, I mean, you can't deny how good of a coach this guy is. He's 17 straight non-losing seasons. I think the record is 21. And Mike Tomlin is creeping on it, and he did it again this season. I cannot believe they did what they did. It was one change. He made one change. That Kenny Pickett gets hurt. They're a pretty good team. They put in Mitch Trubisky. They're not a good team in Mitch Trubisky. And they made one change. They put Mason Rudolph in the game. And Mason Rudolph in his three games has a 118 passer rating with 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. That was to Trubisky's 4 touchdowns and 5 interceptions in 4 games. That's the change. And it was the right thing to do for Mike Tomlin. And it obviously they won their final group of games. And they're in the playoffs. I can't even believe it. They're in the playoffs. We were staring at them. I forget what their record was. But they were
like, it looked like they were out. Eight, like,
I think they were 7-7. I think they were 7-7. They ended season 10-7. They won
3 straight. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were looking at them and we're like, oh no, Mike Tomlin might get his first losing record this season. We thought it was going to happen with Mitch.
And I thought they were going to fire him for it too.
Yeah. 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 And then he does Mike Tomlin things and knows how to get, performance out of his players. And they beat a good backup group of Ravens players to be able to get themselves into the playoffs at the end of the season, with the Jacksonville Jaguars' complete meltdown.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky, more like Ditch Trubisky. I think he should be playing in the UFL terrible next season.
I don't even know if he's good enough to play in the UFL.
I don't know. Shannon Smith, Mike Tomlin is the best coach right now. And then Tim Costello, Mitch was terrible in Chicago. Why even try? I mean, that's kind of the point that we're making here. Let's move on. Next up on the list, the Buccaneers. Of all the offseason moves that were made in the NFC South, again, made the mistake of buying into the hype. I was gaslit by David Tepper and thinking
I love this
the one. Carolina Panthers had a shot to make the playoffs and win the NFC South.
Mm.
I thought the team that was going to be able to compete was the New Orleans Saints. The New Orleans Saints beat the Atlanta Falcons in week 18. So now all they need to do is have the Bucs lose to the 2-win Carolina Panthers in week 18. By which, if nobody was paying attention, Arthur Smith for the Atlanta Falcons was fired after that game. After having a late touchdown scored on him for no reason and throwing a hissy fit at midfield, but the Bucs, despite not scoring a touchdown under Baker Mayfield, the starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers in 2022, defeat the Carolina Panthers 9-0 and win the NFC South to make it back to the playoffs. Bill, what are your thoughts? Because it looks like you've got some thoughts.
I just love that everybody around here hates Baker Mayfield. And he had his best season ever going to a team we thought was going to be pretty bad. I think we talked about them winning 2-3 games. We didn't know who the starter was going to be down there. And was it going to be Kyle Trask? Was it going to be Baker Mayfield? And when they said it was going to be Baker Mayfield, we all went, oh my gosh, oh, they're going to be terrible. Throws for 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 94.6 passer rating, and he leads his team to the playoffs. Way to go, Baker. Could that be the comeback player of the year? Come on. Come on, I know everybody wants to give it to DeMar Hamlin because, of course, it's really good to come back from dying, which is, that's definitely an award that he deserves, but Baker Mayfield deserves it too.
Shout out to our friend Travis, who's a big Baker Mayfield guy. A couple more comments. Volley Polly, he feels about Mitch Trubisky like I feel about Joe Flacco. That's funny. And then Pedro, they beat the bricks off of Tampa too. I'm guessing that's New Orleans, but it was way too late.
Yeah.
Just it's crazy to think of all the teams that we thought had a shot to win the NFC South. I never in a million years would have picked the Bucs, and they do it. And now they get to host the Philadelphia Eagles in a playoff game. Before we get to the Eagles talk and the NFC East talk, let's look at the AFC South, because another division that was shocking that I know you want to get into, the AFC South, the preseason favorite Jacksonville Jaguars collapse down the stretch. The Indianapolis Colts make a push down the stretch. And Tennessee was so bad this year that they just fired, I can't say his name, their head coach. who may be going to New England. We don't know. But behind the rookie stars, behind all the rookies on the Houston Texans, CJ Stroud, Will Anderson, Nico Collins, et cetera, D'Amico Ryans has the Houston Texans, who are a laughing stock in the NFL for the last 2 to 3 years, in the postseason. Bill, what are your thoughts on what D'Amico Ryans has been able to do with CJ Stroud in this Houston Texans team?
Wow. That's it. Wow. Like, that it was a coaching masterpiece. Does that work for, is that a good term to use? I don't think anybody expected
masterclass. Yeah.
Masterclass. Sure. I like that. That's good too. Fantastic. I mean, nobody expected them to win eight games, let alone not eight games. We'll say five. I don't think anybody expected them to win five. I mean, look what you've got with Bryce Young in Carolina, and look what you've got with CJ Stroud in Houston. CJ Stroud in Houston, they might win a playoff game this week. And he's a rookie. I mean, it's craziness what went on there in Houston. 10-7, just fantastic job. I mean, you can't say more than that. I don't even know what you would do, but all those young players, and you had them all playing at a high level.
We had the Texans at 4-3 and 2-15 respectively.
Terrible. Terrible.
It's crazy. It's insane what D'Amico Ryans has done. Congratulations to the Houston Texans, the AFC South Houston Texans. Shout out to my friends Billy and Elizabeth out there in Houston, who I'm sure loved the season. Let's go to the last little storyline coming out of last weekend. The Philadelphia Eagles complete their collapse. lose.
Complete
dumpster fire and allow the Dallas Cowboys to make their comeback and win the NFC East. And the last undefeated team in the NFL is now going to be playing in Tampa on the road in wild card weekend. Bill, thoughts on the Dallas Cowboys and Philadelphia Eagles and how their season sort of flip-flopped as we progressed?
Well, Dak hasn't melted down yet, and I say yet, so we'll see what happens in the playoffs. But what the heck happened in Philly, man? What happened? Started 10-1. 10-1? They lose three games in a row. Now, granted, they were the 49ers, the Cowboys on the road, and to the Seahawks on the road. Now, Seahawks were a decent team, 9-8, fine. They then came back and beat the Giants. Not a great team at that time. They started DeVito in that game. But then they lose an even lowlier team than the Giants and the Cardinals. Come on, guy. What happened?
Again, the Cardinals beat the Cowboys and the Eagles this year.
I know. Yeah.
How does that happen?
The Cowboys game was that original game when they were starting. What's his name? That I don't even remember where he's at now.
Josh Dobbs.
Josh Dobbs. Thank you.
Yeah.
Here's what it is. The Eagles can't play defense all of a sudden. 10-1, they had a pretty good defense. They held Miami to 17 points when Miami was riding high. Everybody thought, oh no, Miami can't beat good teams now because they lost to Buffalo and they lost to the Eagles. Miami then went on to score a whole bunch of points against other teams again. Not good teams. We've figured that out. But at the same time, the Eagles in those final 10 games, or actually, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was final 10 games after they'd stopped Miami in week 7. They give up an average of 28.7 points per game. Can't win games doing that. You just can't. They don't score that many points. The Eagles don't score 28 points a game. So, you know, Jalen Hurts is good for touchdowns, but they're a 21 to 25 point team. And they're giving up way too much. They have to figure out what's going on with the defense, so they're going to be one and done.
The Georgia Delphia Bulldog Eagle defense is not,
yeah, just not
voted
good.
Well down the stretch. Andy Hunter reloaded.
We thought they reloaded.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah,
we did. And now, for the sake of saving some time, we'll talk more about this on next week's show. A lot of firings have taken place in the NFL, and the Panthers have reached out to the Eagles to interview their offensive coordinator for their head coaching vacancy. They're also interested once again in offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions, Ben Johnson, who is asking for $15 million a year to go up to a head coaching job. A lot of vacancies have opened up, and there's still no word on Bill Belichick, but all reports say that divorce is coming. We've talked about it in weeks prior. The Chargers are looking for new coaches. The Raiders are, for whatever reason, not going to sign. And too bad Eric, our friend Eric, Raiders fan, is not in the chat because their interim head coach is apparently not going to be retained. There is a rumor around that the New Orleans Saints is interested in bringing in John Gruden as part of their coaching staff to bring him back together with Derek Carr next season. Some crazy storylines that we'll get into on next week's show after Wild Card Weekend. Pedro back in the chat. I pray Ocho Cinco is right, but I really doubt it. My Eagles really crumbled at the worst time. Kelsey, Cox, and Graham also might be finished in Philly, a sad sight for Eagles fans right now. It's unfortunate.
If Amazing. You're a Philadelphia Week 11, Eagles fan. Week 11, they were riding high. We have the best team in football. Nobody can stop us, and they have completely collapsed after that week. It's amazing. It's weird how the NFL works.
Well, just a quick reminder, if you're watching the show live with us tonight on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter, leave a comment in the chat to join the conversation. We're going to take our first break. We come back. We are going to wrap up 2023-2024 fantasy football before we end the show on our podcast pick'ems. So stay tuned. We'll be right back right here on Tap House and Touchdowns.
This episode is brought to you by Carolina Business Equipment. With offices in Charleston, Greenville, Columbia, and Florence, Carolina Business Equipment can supply your copiers, computers, and printers anywhere in the state of South Carolina. Call my personal best friend Aaron Thompson at 843-452-8761 for a quote today, and make sure you tell him that Ryan from Tap House and Touchdown sent you. Carolina Business Equipment, you worry about your business, let us handle your technology.
Welcome, everybody, back to the show. It's your guy, Billy Rye, alongside Banker Bill, to talk more football here on our weekly live football episode. And without further ado, we started doing some fantasy football talk at the end of our shows. But with fantasy football coming to an end, an official end, after week 18 of the fantasy or of the NFL season, we're going to talk some fantasy football. And before we get into most surprising players and MVPs, I want to shout out congratulations to the winner of the Tap Outs and Touchdowns Fantasy Football League, Sean Selig. Hopefully he'll listen or watch the show at some point. But Sean came in, I think it was a last-minute addition. He actually offered, hey, if you find somebody else, don't worry about it. I'm okay. And I kind of wish he had now.
I know.
Because he knocked me out of the playoffs in the semis, and he was able to go on and just absolutely – I mean, I think he dropped 250 – no, that was my work league. There was somebody in my work league that dropped 256 points in the championship game. The guy that he played dropped 154. Any other week, that'd be good enough to win. But when you got CeeDee Lamb going off for 44 points in the final week of at least week 17. So I finished my seasons in week 17, so you don't have to worry about guys sitting games. Bill, do you like that format where you stop in week 17
Heck
and
yes.
just kind of get to
Heck
enjoy
yes.
week 18?
I was talking to some guys at work this week, and they were telling me how they play a two-week final
yep.
where you have to pay attention to your roster for the guys that are being dropped. And I get why that could be fun, but at the same time, I feel like you build your roster from the very beginning to yeah. be and you're going to watch most of those players play all the way up until week 17. And that's what we saw this season. I think it's the right thing to do. I like when you do that.
Volley Polly might as well call me the NFC South since I won my brother-in-law's league with a 7-8 record. Awesome. That's amazing.
Awesome. Yeah.
Bill, I know my answer is no, but got to ask. Did you win any fantasy football league championships this season?
I did.
I know
that
I got.
So the guy that finished second in the Tap Outs and Touchdowns League, Daniel Pope, I'm in his other league, and I did end up winning that. I don't know if I was able to say it on here, but I did win the semifinal game by 0.0. I think I did tell that story on here.
Yeah.
Won the semifinal game by 0.02 and then ended up closing it out in the championship game. What was it, the next Saturday night or next Sunday night that they play? Because I don't think there's a Monday night game. Anyway, closed it out. Or maybe there was. I think that it doesn't matter. I won it. And, yeah, I feel pretty good about it.
This is the first time you played fantasy football in how many years?
I played one that league last season and lost in the semifinal game. And then I played two leagues this season. And it prior to that, I think probably around 2007, 2008.
Banker Bill just showing y'all how it's done, all right?
I just don't like it very much. No, well, no. I didn't until this season, honestly. I don't like rooting for players that I don't want to do well. So, like, you know, when I'm playing, when there are players that are playing against the Dolphins and they're on my team, I was like, oh, I don't want them to do well. You know, I hate doing that, but this season it was fun. Especially when the Dolphins are good anyway. It didn't matter.
Well, next season, hopefully you guys will listen a little more to Banker Bill. If he can make the semis in one league and win the championship in another, I think he kind of knows where he's going for. Bill, when it comes to fantasy football, there's always we talked a couple weeks ago about the biggest fantasy disappointments in fantasy football. There are some players that may have shocked you or at least shocked us in fantasy football. I'm not sure how you did this, completely peek behind the curtain. We didn't talk a lot about this mm-hmm. before the show. I've got one player in every position that surprised me the most in fantasy football. How did you put it together, and how do you want to go about talking about this?
I can do that as well. I can do the fantasy player of the year, like the person I consider the player of the year at a certain position. But if they're more, I would say they're more surprises for both, but I'll give you the player of the year for each one. I can kind of do that. That's fine.
So I've got both. Like, I've got the most surprising. Yeah, all right. So let's start off with the most surprising players of the year. I'm going to start off with quarterback here, and I'm going to go, we've already talked about their team being a big surprise as it was. And I'm going with Houston Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud. He finished 11th in scoring from a quarterback perspective in fantasy football. Only 4 weeks all season below 15 fantasy points. And he only had 3 games where he did not throw for a touchdown. And in all games that he played this year, and I remember he missed a few games, I believe, due to a concussion. But in all the games that he played this year, he only had 1 multi-interception game all season. And for a rookie, he only threw 5 interceptions. So if you had C.J. Stroud, more than likely, he helped you make a playoff push at some point or another. Bill, give me your quarterback who's the biggest surprise to you in fantasy football this season.
And I did research for this, what was this, 2 weeks ago before you were broken?
Before I was broken.
Yeah, we didn't go over this. We pushed it off for a week, and then you got hurt, and we didn't get to do it again. So this has been multiple weeks, and I almost can't believe my research on this, but I'm going to give you my player, Jordan Love. He was the 6th overall quarterback in points scored. That's what my research says.
That's crazy.
And obviously, he's a waiver claim. Nobody drafted this guy. And he clearly, if you had this guy, made really good moves and was, you know, pretty fantastic for your team being that high up scorer. So that's who's my surprising quarterback this season.
Honorable mention would have to go to why can't I say his name as I'm trying to pull him up here on our app. Let's look at quarterback scoring. Why can't it? Brock Purdy.
Oh, that's Brock, not fair. That's not Brock, fair because that's my player of the year.
Oh, that's your player of the year. All right.
That's, a good segue, though. It's a good segue into our quarterback player of the year.
Yeah, let's go player of the year. Who's your quarterback?
It is Brock Purdy, 4th overall in scoring for quarterbacks. Again, a waiver claim. You claimed him up on our Tap Outs and Touchdowns League. You actually wanted to draft him and didn't, and because nobody else did, because he was injured. We didn't know how his elbow was going to be, and nobody wanted to pick him up. And here, you know, he was super low on all draft boards, and here he ended up being the 4th best quarterback. I think when you get your production out of a player like that, that surprises you. It gives you a lot of options. And, so Brock Purdy, player of the year, quarterback.
I'm going to give you my quarterback player of the year. And from fantasy perspective, it might be low-hanging fruit, but I don't care. It goes to the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, Dak Prescott. He finished 2nd.
Boo. In
quarterback scoring. I know. Listen, it is what it is. I'm sure Michael Davis will be happy about this.
Yeah.
But he finished 2nd in scoring in quarterback scoring in fantasy football. The year after he led the league in interceptions, he only had 9 interceptions all season. Throughout the fantasy football season, he only had 2 games where he scored under 10 fantasy points, and he had a whopping 6 games with 30 or more fantasy points, including those who kept playing until week 18 in the fantasy leagues, where I believe he had like 44 points in week 18 if you had to play the final week. Tim Costello, pay that man his money.
His money.
Play like that. Pay that man his money, if anybody knows
that's
that.
That's a good one.
A reference.
A little Rounders and then, reference.
Yeah, good Rounders reference, yep. And then Pedro is not happy with my pick for my quarterback player of the year. Bill, I'm going to let you start us off here. Give me your running back that most surprised you this year in fantasy football.
Running back out of Tampa Bay, Rashad White. 3rd overall in scoring. Nobody expected that one.
It's a good pick. I'm going to give you mine. Kyren Williams from the Los Angeles Rams. He missed 5 games on the season, including the season finale, but he still finished 7th in running back scoring. Only 2 games in which he played that he finished under 10 fantasy points, and he only had 4 games in which he played this year. 4 games where he did not find the end zone. My running back surprise, Kyren Williams from the LA Rams. I'm going to start us off here with my running back MVP, and it should go as no surprise. And this is the lowest hanging fruit that I've had all season.
You can't eat egg. It's got to be
Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Some people, me, were concerned that he wouldn't be able to stay healthy for an entire season. But despite getting banged up, he played in every single game minus the season finale after the 49ers already won their division. He was the #1 scorer in fantasy. And longtime Christian McCaffrey fans aren't shocked. Bill, I'm assuming you have the same answer here.
I do. And the staggering statistic that I have is that he averaged 7.7 points more per game than the #2 running back.
That's insane.
That's game-winning stuff. That's championship winning stuff from Christian McCaffrey. That makes him the overall consensus number one next season, guaranteed.
Not to mention, it's crazy to think that just 2 years ago, he was on a roster out east.
Yeah. Oh. Hey, but at least we got the Panthers got a bag of peanuts, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's basically what they got for him. Bag of peanuts.
Bill, give us your most surprising wide receiver from 2023.
This one's hard. I feel like I could pick either one of these guys, honestly, because they're two guys that they're both surprising. But I think the way that I did this, Ryan, it's not quite the MVP. I think the MVP is going to be somebody else that comes out of the wide receiver because, like, Tyreek is going to be your number one wide receiver because he was the highest scoring, right? So I'm not going to say that he was my MVP. My most valuable players are players that you really wouldn't expect to be great. But my most surprising wide receiver is going to be Michael Pittman Jr.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I think nobody wanted to draft him coming out of, you know, into the season this year because obviously we were all taking a dump on Anthony Richardson, didn't think was going to throw the ball very well. Michael Pittman Jr. went on to be the 11th best wide receiver in fantasy sports, and he was drafted in our league in the 8th round.
That's outstanding. Listen, I'm going to give you one that nobody drafted. I'm talking if you had to go through – and anybody that drafted before week one, if they say they drafted this guy, they're lying to your face. So go ahead and guess.
Does it rhyme with Poopoo Nudua?
Yeah, it does. Puka okay. Nacua, my most surprising wide receiver, finished with a rookie record 1,486 receiving yards and fourth in fantasy points scoring for wide receivers. Even after Cooper Kupp came back for the Rams from injury, Nacua only had four games all season under 10 fantasy points. This dude, with or without Cooper Kupp, is going to be a fantasy star going forward. Let's see. Michael Pittman Jr. Volley Polly liked your pick there. Let's see. I did have – oh, let's go.
I actually, Ryan, I had Nacua as my MVP for wide receivers. Because of where he would have been drafted. If you drafted him, I can't – like you said, I can't believe he was actually drafted. So you probably got him on a waiver pick, and you got a gift. I mean, this guy was unbelievable week one. He was unbelievable week two. The league that I won, Ryan, I picked him up before week three. Nobody picked him up in the first 2 weeks. I don't think I believed in him as a rookie. I picked him up before week three, and he just kept rolling. And that was one of the keys to my championship this year.
I would have picked him up week one. How do you not pick him up after the monster week? Even if it's only going to carry.
It was because Cooper Kupp was injured. I think people were worried about Cooper Kupp being injured. I think people weren't really looking at him. But at the same time, I was like, well, take a flyer on this guy. If he can do it 1 week, he's pretty darn good. So, and he just kept showing it. Unfortunately, he beat Jalen Waddle's records. I was bummed out by that.
Well, if Puka Nacua, a star gets hurt and a star is born.
Yeah,
100%. I agree with that.
Nice. That's pretty good. We should write that down somewhere.
Yeah, a star gets hurt, a star is born. It's the Brady effect. Yep. Thanks, Tim Casella, for that little. Listen, you mentioned that Tyreek Hill was the top scorer in fantasy football, believe it or not. Thanks to the week 18 output by CeeDee Lamb.
CeeDee outran him.
But he is still my fantasy MVP at wide receiver. Finished second in scoring, was on pace to destroy Calvin Johnson's single season receiving yards record before he got banged up in week 14. He didn't finish a single game under 10 fantasy points, and he had at least one touchdown in all but five games all season. That's crazy to think about a receiver that scores in every single game. Let's move over to tight end and go to the most surprising tight end. Bill, I'm going to let you start us off here because my most surprising is also my MVP, and we may have the same guy. So
I know exactly who you're going to say, but I'll give you my most surprising. I like this one a lot because he didn't really come on until the middle of the season and still ended up as the 8th over. Now, I looked at my points, I think, after week 17. So that's where I'm going to get my numbers because our season was over, which I think a lot of seasons were over. Like I said, I don't know why you would play into the last week in a fantasy league, but because, like, you know, you lose a lot of teams. Like, if you have Lamar Jackson and you are playing into week 18, I feel bad for you. But mine is Trey McBride. Really didn't do anything until about week 6, I think.
You're right.
5 or 6, and ended up as the 8th overall scoring tight end in fantasy football. So that one, and obviously a waiver pickup. Nobody drafted that guy.
He finished 7th, by the way. So not far behind.
He moved forward. He moved ahead in week 18.
He did move up one spot. Yeah, I believe he passed Cole Kmet.
I think that our MVP comes from the team you're wearing right now.
So I get to talk about him. Not only my most surprising, but my fantasy tight end MVP. And that goes to none other.
So giddy.
I'm so giddy. None other than rookie tight end Sam Laporta. Believe it or not, He finished tops. He was the number one scoring tight end in fantasy football. I knew he was going to make an impact, but not this kind of impact this early. He made the Pro Bowl as a rookie, despite having his being injured in week 18. He had 3 20-plus point fantasy days and 10 tight ends, or I'm sorry, 10 touchdowns onto the season. Dude outscored guys like TJ Hockenson, Travis Kelce, George Kittle. And if you remember correctly, David Njoku really picked up the pace thanks to Joe Flacco coming on. Yep. But Sam LaPorta showed everybody, showed the world why the Lions were right in making the decisions to move on from TJ Hockenson in favor of a younger Sam LaPorta, my fantasy most surprising tight end and my fantasy football tight end MVP.
Do you know anybody that drafted him on all his teams?
I tried. I got him in two leagues, but oh, you
I got
took
him in. I got him in got both him in leagues. I got him in both leagues. 13th round, by the way. And yes, you were very upset.
I was very upset because it was my next pick.
I know.
Volley Polly said he had LaPorta in his Yahoo league.
I think I was drafting with my dad, who's also in our league. And I said, watch, this one's going to make Ryan really mad.
Tim Costello remembers. I talked to him. I talked about him before draft day. I was very high on Sam LaPorta. And had I been able to just get him one round before you did, I would have had Sam LaPorta in every single league. What a fun fantasy football season. Got Bill back into fantasy football. He had more fun, like he said, than most of his seasons in the past. But that's it. That's a wrap for fantasy football. There are some fantasy football playoff pools where you have to pick from certain teams. But if your team loses and you've got guys on those teams that don't move forward in the playoffs, then you're kind of SOL. But there are some DraftKings stuff that you can do for fantasy playoffs if you wanted to do so. But you know, do it at your own leisure. Do it. You know, gamble responsibly if that's what you plan on doing. Bill, we're gonna take our final break. We come back. We are in wild card weekend of the NFL, and we are gonna pick all six games.
Quickly,
we missed pick'ems. We are gonna have to do it pretty quickly. So we're gonna take our final break. Come back. Podcast pick'ems. Stay tuned. We'll be right back right here on Tap House and Touchdowns.
Established in 2008, One Stop Repairs in North Charleston, South Carolina, is your one-stop shop for all of your electronic repair needs. Specializing in cell phones, tablets, computers, laptops, and game consoles, One Stop Repairs offers reputable and quality service with the quickest turnaround time and the most competitive prices in the Lowcountry. You can find them on Google with an exceptional 4.9 star rating, or on Facebook by searching for One Stop Repairs. Call for a quote today at 843-343-6310. That's the number one, One Stop Repairs.
All right, podcast pick'ems. It's your guy, Billy Rye, with Banker Bill here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns. And like I said, we've got six wild card games to pick this coming weekend in the NFL. The last time we picked, Banker Bill had a phenomenal week, and I did not. And it improves Banker Bill 57, 33, and 1 on the season. I fall down to 51, 39, and 1. I don't think I'm going to catch Bill this year, but we're going to have fun trying anyway. Let's go ahead and get started here. The first game on the docket, 4:30 kickoff Saturday afternoon. The Browns, a road favorite, 2.5 points over the Texans are they favored. Bill, what say you, Browns at Texans in our first wild card matchup of 2024?
I can't believe I'm going to say this. I think the Browns win this game. I do. I think they cover. Well, I think they're going to cover. I don't know why I'm nervous about it. I just talked about how great D'Amico Ryans has been coaching. He'll have that team ready to play, obviously. But, man, the Browns have looked so good since Joe Flacco started playing. They have a good defense. Browns.
The Browns have a really good defense. Joe Flacco has been playing the way Joe Flacco did in his playoff run with the Ravens. He is going to ask for a bunch of money. The Browns are going to have questions to answer going into the offseason. We saw Pete Carroll leave Seattle earlier today. We'll talk about that more next week. But we're also looking at potentially teams moving on from high-paid quarterbacks. They benched Russell Wilson in the last 2 weeks of the season for the Denver Broncos because they plan on moving on from him before his big money contract kicks in. You wonder if the Browns are going to do the same thing with Deshaun Watson with the way Joe Flacco has played. However, I think the Cinderella season continues for Cleveland, and it ends for Houston. I'm with you with this. Cleveland as well on the road. Next up, your Miami Dolphins are going on the road Saturday night, 8 o'clock, Tyreek Hill's return to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. The Chiefs, a 4-point favorite at home. Bill, I'm going to start us off here since I get accused of not starting us off most games. I have been high on the Dolphins all season long, much to my detriment. You mentioned they've been banged up a little bit late in the season. I'm taking the Dolphins to get the win on the road. I don't think they should have lost to the Bills in Week 18, and I don't think they'll lose to the Chiefs. Bill, what say you? Your Dolphins at the Chiefs.
Crazy talk, Ryan. Crazy talk. Kickoff is going to be 0 degrees in Kansas City. The reality is they probably shouldn't even be playing this game. It's going to be negative 15 wind chill. It is awful, awful, awful in Kansas City this week. They're actually telling the fans to stay home for their health. And yeah, a lot of people are saying they should be moving this game to Indianapolis, that they shouldn't even be playing in this weather. It's football weather. Let's see what happens. But with that being said, it's going to be windy, 24-mile-an-hour winds or something like that. It's awful. The whole thing is awful. Chiefs going to cover.
If they're looking at having to keep the ball on the ground, I think the Dolphins have a better run game to take over this game. That's another reason why I'm taking the Dolphins. Sunday, we get three wild card games Sunday afternoon, starting off the 1 o'clock game. The Steelers traveling to the Bills again. Earlier today when I pulled this point spread up, the Bills have the largest point spread of anybody in wild card weekend, 10-point spread hosting the Steelers. Bill, what say you, Steelers at Bills?
Bills are on a roll. Do I think they're this good, 10 points good? Probably not, but they're on a roll. Buffalo's going to be rocking, and I just don't think the Steelers are that good. So, yeah, I think the Bills cover this. I think the Bills are a much better team than the Steelers overall. We'll see what happens, though. It'll be interesting, but yeah, I think Bills cover this week.
Tim Costello, I want to remind everybody, the 8 o'clock kickoff between the Chiefs and Dolphins are on Peacock. So go get you a Peacock account. There's a lot of really quality stuff, a cheap plug for Peacock.
Supercross.
You've also got WWE Network is located on Peacock. So
nobody cares about that, Ryan.
You do. You're gonna watch the Royal Rumble with me, and that's on Peacock.
Yeah, all right. Sure.
I think Steelers cover this. I don't think they win this game, but I think the Steelers have been playing better as of late, and I think they cover this 10-point spread. Yeah, the Bills got hot, but that's a 10-point spread in a playoff game in the NFL is a huge, huge spread. So give me the Steelers to cover. Sunday, 4:30 kickoff, the Green Bay Packers, who snuck their way in to the playoffs the last weekend of the season, travel to the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys a 7.5-point favorite. I'll tell you, if there's one team that I will buy in the hype, that's the Dallas Cowboys. And granted, they, for all intents and purposes, should have lost to the Lions in Week 17. Dak Prescott is on another level right now. CeeDee Lamb is on another level. It'd be nice for Cowboys fans to see a little bit more balance from the run game, but they've had a quietly decent run game this year. And as long as Dak Prescott isn't turning the ball over, they win games, and they're not going to turn the ball over against the Packers. Give me the Cowboys to cover the 7.5 points. But I know I just talked about 10 points being too much. And 7.5 points is a lot as well. But I think the Cowboys can get away with a 10-point win. Bill, what say you?
Let's write that down. Let's write down that Ryan thinks 7.5 is not too much, but 10 is too much.
I hate
in the
you.
Playoffs. Let's figure that out. I just want to point out, you talked about predictions earlier this season. I predicted after preseason the Packers were going to be a whole heck of a lot better than we thought they were going to be.
You did.
Originally. Mm-hmm. And hot dang, Packers are in the playoffs. Figure that one out.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah, hot dang. Can't believe it. Packers are a pretty decent team. Jordan Love, a lot better quarterback than I think a lot of people expected him to be, being, you know, it was his first season as starter. But yeah, he did have a good season, and that's pretty cool that Aaron Rodgers is sitting home complaining about Jimmy Kimmel and Jordan Love still playing football. So that's kind of neat.
Also, with that being said, Lions winning the division too. Let's be clear about that.
True. Yeah. But with that being said, I think the Cowboys are a lot better team than the Packers, and I hate to say they're going to cover. I think they're going to cover this by a lot. I think it's going to be a blowout.
A couple quick comments here. Pedro Guillen, Cowboys should cover that easy. Volley Polly, I need Dallas to win so I can get money from Josh. Mister, you need to get off the internet. I think that's a little rivalry they have going on the side here. The final game Sunday night, my Detroit Lions hosting the LA Rams Sunday, 8:15 kickoff. In all the years that Matt Stafford played for the Detroit Lions, this is his first opportunity to play a playoff game in the city of Detroit at Ford Field. I've been waiting to say that on this podcast for the last 2 weeks. The Rams at Lions. Bill, did you pick first? I picked first last No, you pick first the last game. I'm going to pick first here. Give me the Lions, man. I listen.
You pick if you first last game.
I don't care. I'm doing it again here. I've got my NFC North championship gear. I am ready for this game. Granted, I'm so glad for Matt Stafford to finally get to play a playoff game in the city of Detroit. Super happy that he gets to return home. There are people calling for a ban of his jersey this weekend. One business up in Detroit is offering free jersey swaps.
That's petty.
It's very petty, especially considering Matt Stafford and his wife are very fond of the city of Detroit and very grateful for the time.
He did not trade himself.
No. So, and he's got a Super Bowl with the LA Rams. But yeah, give me the Lions to win this game by at least a touchdown. We just talked about how great Puka Nacua was, how great Kyren Williams was for the Rams. They have a great offense. They have a pretty good defense. Aaron Donald is going to be able to get after Jared Goff. That's what scares me about this game, because if the Lions can't protect Jared Goff, then it's going to be a long night for the Detroit Lions. Bill, what say you? Rams at Lions. Lions a 3-point home favorite.
I am very scared for your sanity Sunday night. I really am. I think this one's going to be very scary. I think this one's going to be close. The Rams are pretty much on fire. They started the season pretty slow. I thought they were a lot better than they were in the middle of the season. Their record showed in the middle of the season, and they picked it up. And that makes me very nervous for the Lions, because the Lions are not a very high-powered offense unless they get Sam LaPorta rolling. When Sam LaPorta rolls, the Lions roll, and I think they could beat the Rams if they do that. I think they will, and I think the Lions do win this game.
Unfortunately, we don't know if Sam LaPorta is going to play in this game.
He's going to play in this game.
In a bone bruise.
He's going to play in this game. You cannot keep Sam LaPorta out of this game.
Well, they're expecting him to make a return like Travis Kelce did back in week one.
He's going
to
play.
I'll be interested to see. But I'm with you. I'm the one that's been said it. I'm the one that's been saying it all season. If you get Sam LaPorta heavily involved in the offense,
yes,
the Lions offense is going to be better. And so I'm right there with you with that point. The final wild card game of the weekend, Monday Night Football, Eagles are a 3-point road favorite at the Bucs. I cannot believe saying that they are only a 3-point favorite. Bill, I'm going to let you start us off here. Bucs hosting the Eagles. Who wins this game? Can the Bucs cover the spread?
It's funny. I think I might have picked the Bucs to win this game, except I had to sit through the absolute steamer that the Carolina Panthers Bucs game was, with the lack of offense on both sides of the ball. I don't know what the heck happened there, but that gave me zero faith in the Bucs offense being able to move the football, even though the Eagles, we talked about how bad their defense has been for the last 3 months. However, I gotta feel like they're gonna get it right for the playoffs. So they have to change something. They're gonna figure it out. The Bucs obviously have their shortcomings as well, and I think that the Eagles cover this on the road. Monday Night Football. Weird Monday Night Football in the playoffs. Super wild card weekend down there in Tampa.
Yeah, listen, the Eagles had a lot of guys banged up in the final week of the season. You had A.J. Brown. They feared that he tore his ACL. That remained intact. Jalen Hurts left that game. You mentioned the Eagles stopped playing defense. I'm still convinced that when the Eagles started losing games, they started tanking so they could get this game in the playoffs. They wanted to play the winner of the NFC South, because everybody in the NFC South is garbage. I don't care that the Bucs are 9-7. The Eagles wanted this game so that they can win in the playoffs, because they're not going to win another game in the playoffs. The Eagles win this game. They win by 7 or more, but they're not going to win another game in the playoffs. Give me the Eagles this week, and only this week, in the 2024 NFL playoffs. Bill, we are to my favorite part of the show.
I hate this part of the show.
Homer's Corner. And you sort of hinted it out earlier, but You've got some stuff that you want to get off your chest about the Miami Dolphins. How you got banged up at the wrong time.
It's not really complaining. It's not. I'm not complaining about it. I just wonder what I have to burn in order to lift the curse that is the Miami Dolphins, that is on the Miami Dolphins. I'm just going to read you the list, okay?
Let's do it.
I'm just going to read you the list. And I think this was prior to last week. They adjusted it, but this is after last week. These are the players that are on the Miami Dolphins that are either on injured reserve or playing with injuries or whatever it is that they are going to be dealing with this weekend. I'm not sure if some of these are fairly good. It doesn't matter. Bradley Chubb, defensive end, starting defensive end, had 11 sacks this season, gets hurt a couple weeks ago, injured reserve. Jalen Phillips, 9 sacks this season, gets hurt. I think it was on Christmas Eve. He had 9 sacks at the time. He's on injured reserve. Connor Williams, the Pro Football Focus highest graded center in the NFL this season until he got hurt. He's on injured reserve. Isaiah Wynn, left tackle, got hurt in the Buffalo game, week 4, injured reserve. Keon Crossing, cornerback, he stinks, but he's on injured reserve. Salvin Ahmed, you've seen him. He's the running back. He's on injured reserve. Jalen Waddle, he didn't play for a couple weeks. We don't know if he's going to play this week. Raheem Mostert didn't play last week. We don't know if he's going to play this week. Xavien Howard gets hurt in the Baltimore first series of the Baltimore game, misses that game, rest of that game, and the game after against the Bills.
I believe he got carted off too.
Yeah. He got carted off. We don't know if he's going to play this week. Andrew Van Ginkle, who was their sack leader and basically the catalyst of their defense after they lost their other two edge rushers, he's out for the season. Jerome Baker, he's the signal caller on the defense, middle linebacker, out for the season since after last week. Cameron Good, the guy that replaced Andrew Van Ginkle, out for the season. Same game. We lost two guys in the same position. Tyreek Hill, Javon Holland, Deshaun Elliott, Devon Achane, Teron Armstead, Lester Cotton, Liam Eichenberg, Rob Hunt, Austin Jackson, David Long, Jalen Ramsey, Duke Riley, Zach Steeler, Tua Tagovailoa, all playing with injuries. I don't know. Stay healthy, my friends.
Tim Costello says you need to burn. He said to burn some sage.
Sage, tell me what procedure I need to do. Somebody's got to help me with this. I have to figure it out. That is a list, man. That is a list. That's probably my longest homer's corner of the season, and all I did was read names to you.
I kind of want to change my pick now with you, when you gave me that list. I'm kidding. I'm still taking the Dolphins, but really, really rough situation.
Don't worry. In order to actually put pass rushers on the field, we signed Justin Houston, fresh off of nobody's team because he got cut by the Carolina Panthers, who were so good this year. They were like, we don't need Justin Houston.
They had a good defense, but we can.
He had 9.5 sacks last season for the Baltimore Ravens. And then we also signed Bruce Irvin.
You also got Melvin Ingram in week 17.
He's been playing. He covered somebody last week, and it looked ridiculous. It looked like me trying to cover somebody because he's still got the giant fat belly that a 34-year-old man would have.
He's a defensive end. He shouldn't be rolling out in coverage. They're calling him a linebacker. He's
an outside linebacker.
But Andy says they're not going to feel anything. It's going to be negative 15 degrees. So whether they're hurt or not, they're not going to feel it. So that's a very
ACL tear. Don't feel it.
Yep. No, let's just keep going.
That's just what it is. Yeah.
My homer's corner has nothing to do with football. It has nothing to do with sports. Last week, for those of you who saw social media, I broke my rib on New Year's Eve coughing. Now, a lot of people think, well, that's not a really good story. Or maybe, you know, what did you really do? Like, were you wrestling bears in the mall? Like, did you get in a bar fight on New Year's Eve? None of that happened. The exact story was I was sitting in a parking lot, head of the banker Bill's house, and I just happened to let out a cough that I've been fighting for 2 months. And when I did, I heard and felt a pop in my back that took my breath away. I thought I was going to pass out and run into the front end of this grocery store of the parking lot that I was in. I toughed it out for the rest of the night. The next day, woke up and realized that I can't tough this out anymore. So I'm going to go to the doctor. And sure to come to find out, although the radiologist missed it, the doctor came in and showed a picture where the bones were separated and I had a broken rib that every time I coughed, you could feel the rib separate and pop back into place. It was probably the most unbearable pain that I have ever been in my entire life. It is a long healing process because there's nothing that you can do but mash your rear end and just sit back and rest and let it heal. So I'm out of work for a considerable period of time as I try to let this thing heal. It isn't as unbearable as it was last week. But a lot of people on social media, thanks to my mom and my sister, who got the word out as if I was dying, but a lot of people gave me a lot of warm well wishes and kind words. And I wanted to thank everybody for reaching out and doing that for me because it was a very painful injury, one that you would never expect to happen the way that it did. But again, thanks everybody. The kind wishes. I will still be around as this continues to happen. I'll be back on the show. Obviously, I'm able to sit up in a chair for at least an hour and 15 minutes as we've been on the show without being excruciating pain. But that's also why they give you medication so that when it does start aching where you can't get comfortable, you take the medication. It's supposed to make you feel better. So I wanted to take this week's Homer's Corner and thank everybody for your well wishes. And thank everybody for understanding and appreciating why we didn't have a show last week and why I wanted to thank everybody for staying extra long this week. Tim Costello says, I take your breath away, Bully. You're welcome, Tim. I'm glad to do it. And Mama Frick saying, I just said that I broke a rib. And that's why I was doing the homework.
I was there. I was there. It was devastating to watch Ryan in as much pain as he was in. Didn't know what to do.
None of us did.
I think I'm going to leave. And I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean? What's wrong? It was awful. Good news is you still did a fantastic Frank Sinatra rendition with a broken rib that night. So
your dad loved it, man.
Yeah.
Like nothing made me happier than a New Yorker loving the Southerner belt out Frank Sinatra and just loved it. It was great.
Good time.
Bill, anybody else you want to shout out to before we end the show tonight?
I'm good, man. Go Fins. Fins up. Let's go.
Thanks to everybody who was a part of the show. Everybody who joined the chat. There's just too many of you to recall. Thanks to everybody who watched live. Make sure if you aren't already doing so, you go give us a follow on Twitter at Tapouts and TDs, on Facebook.com/Tapouts and Touchdowns, and the YouTube channel where you can see all this and all wrestling episodes of Tapouts and Touchdowns as well. And make sure you go and follow the Tobacco Road Sports Radio's YouTube channel where you can find podcasts on the Keep Pounding Podcast Network video library, which includes my show over on the Keep Pounding Podcast Network, The Cat Cave, with Michael Davis and Shannon Smith, where we talk all things Carolina Panthers every week, and even in the offseason, since the Carolina Panthers were in the offseason, I don't know, 6 weeks ago. So thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. Make sure you come back next week and see more from Baker Bill and your guy, Bully Rye. Thanks, everybody, who's part of the show tonight. We'll see you next week right here on Tapouts and Touchdowns.